morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
Happy Earth Day.
Yes, happy Earth Day to you.
Maybe it's happy Earth Week.
Earth Week.
Well, yeah, because by the time we repeat a couple of times.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, every day is Earth Day.
Well, it should be.
It should be.
But it's the day where we recognize that it's pretty important that we stay connected to our true roots and make sure we take care of the planet.
And it started 45 years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
And since then, the world population has doubled. And the number of species has been cut in half.
Wow.
In 45 years.
Boy, talk about devastating impact.
Yeah, so.
Okay, well, all hope is lost.
It's just, no, not all hope is lost, but, you know, there's momentum in everything. And
yeah, well, and
and everything is about momentum.
Yeah, and we better just stay aware,
yeah, right?
Because it's very easy to become complacent. And every generation has its own measurement of worsening, right? And we have to remember we got to look back further than when we were 12.
Yes.
In order to really judge what's been happening.
Yes.
And make good decisions.
Indeed, we do.
And in fact, at the conference we were just at.
That sounds
I'm sorry, that was quick to get into the reference.
So grown up. At a conference I attended.
Well, there was a moment. I think it was when we were on Sunday when we were all a little bit overtired.
Overtired. And
there was a party in the hospitality suite the night before.
The night before.
So there were some bleary eyes there. But the Sunday morning when there was a presenter about to start, for some reason they had this local artist sort of open the whole day. And she said something so amazing. She said that one of the comments in the video that the Arts Alliance showed everyone showed a guy that said, art gives you inner strength. And she said, our role is to help government leaders find the inner strength to make the courageous decisions. And that just really hit me because it's not just decisions about the importance of arts and culture in our lives. It's the courageous decisions about climate change and all of those other protective measures that they're scared to make. They're in a fear-based mode right now. And they don't want to lose votes.
No.
So they don't want to challenge industry. They don't want to make it look like they're not encouraging more jobs and
they don't want
more prosperity.
Damage the economy. They don't.
Yeah.
I think we're in zero prosperity growth.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out how we can do better with the same.
Yeah.
Which is different than doing more.
Well, exactly, because growth has been the
only... With more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Growth is the only way the economy continues to support the model that it is. So we have to figure out an entirely different model. Yeah. That's challenging. So on that happy note...
It's a big topic.
Yeah, it is a big topic.
But I am happy that it's cloudy and rainy today, though, speaking of Earth Day. I'm a little worried about the summer.
Yeah, we're already in hot mode.
Yes.
It's not even
24 yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's dry. I was trying to dig up tulip bulbs, and I couldn't even get my shovel down about 4 inches.
Is that right, eh?
Oh, nasty. Okay.
All right. So it's got to keep
raining. So not enough snow, not enough rain. Climate change, right?
Yeah.
What do you do, right?
We're going to have to be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is about being mindful and recognizing that, you know, the weather is not about being convenient or inconvenient. It's kind of who we are, right? Maybe that's why we talk about the weather so much.
Maybe.
It
is. We are directly connected to it. And it affects us. We're bags of mostly water.
Yes.
So, of course, the barometric pressure affects us. We have to sort of be okay with that.
That's right.
And recognize it as an important part of, like our culture, really.
That's right.
How we go about our lives.
Earth Day. Happy Us Day, then.
Yeah.
Should be Happy Us Day.
Happy People Day.
Yeah.
And Species Day.
Speaking of us, we have a difference of opinion on this matter, don't we?
Well, I mean, I came into this when we decided last week we would do an Earth Day show. I came into it from an artist perspective. And of course, you come into it with a designer perspective.
So for an artist, environmental arts, which is today's topic, I don't know if we actually said
by
that
the way,
yet, is different than what it is for a designer.
Yeah. So environmental art for an artist is, you know, generally art that is created site specific, that is used with natural materials and is meant to decay or disappear with the natural processes of nature.
So it's ephemeral.
Yes.
I know. I don't think I've ever used that word
really?
In a sentence.
Oh,
yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ephemeral.
At the conference, Campbell River was talking about a public art project that would only appear when it rains.
Ooh.
Sort of like the opposite.
Yeah.
To get people out because it rains a lot there.
Yeah.
That's such a great idea.
Campbell River's in the top five, by the way.
Is it?
High functioning arts councils.
Oh, there you go.
And I just want to point out.
Hey, where's that list? I never saw that list.
Did you not hear this?
No.
Okay. I was sitting around a lovely patio table with a whole bunch of Arts BC board members.
Yes.
And I sat down and they said, oh, hi, Tracy, where are you from? And Salmon Arm, Shoe Swap. Oh, Shoe Swap. Oh, you guys are ranked high.
Hi.
And I'm like, what? They said, yeah, we're in the top five.
We are?
There's like 90 some arts councils in BC and we're in the top five. So, okay, it goes like this. It goes Golden is number one.
Golden is number one.
Yeah. And then North Van.
Okay.
Campbell,
there.
Yeah, Campbell River.
Okay.
And the gal couldn't remember who's number four, but we are number five tied with Gabriola.
Really?
Yes. And I mean, we're talking, we're over Whistler, we're over like Kamloops, like, you know, all the, we're really
you're
high
over
up there.
Kamloops?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I know. Like we're ahead of a lot and, you know, a whole bunch of coastal ones. And
who says who? Do they have like this secret
this
list?
This is BC Arts Council. And so what happens is when you, when you apply.
We're number five.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. We're like, this is really big.
Yeah.
So when they do the applications, mm-hmm. of course, like BC Arts Council applications are really reflective.
Yes.
You have to think hard about everything
like
you do.
This is how it makes me feel.
And I actually at the one thing that we went to with BC Arts Council representatives, I actually thanked them because they apparently get complaints about being so reflective of your programming. But I said, thank you for that opportunity because it really helps me plan for the future when I know how things have actually succeeded. And maybe I'm just imagining they've succeeded because I think the whatever it did, you know, it happened, turned out fine. But
I'm awesome, right?
Yeah.
That's we all want to think that.
Yeah. So when you evaluate your programs and you show them what you do and you have to cover a certain range, BC Arts Council has a mandate, right, to support First Nations, youth, you know, all the things. So when they evaluate all of your programming and your numbers, your statistics, your financials, plus your reflective portion of your grant, then you get points, right, on the system. And so over the years, your points kind of start to accumulate into a ranking of overall. So it's been several years that we've been top five arts councils.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we're very diverse, right? We have the exhibitions. We have the Wednesday on the Wharf, Family Saturdays, right? We have an artist database, and we include First Nations in exhibitions and like other programming. Mm-hmm. It's not like I think that there's a sort of a sense that, okay, if the focus is on youth, we got to just create a youth thing.
Yeah.
But really, we don't really do that. We just make sure that youth is included in
everything
current
that
programming
yes.
that current programming expands to include youth and First Nations. I just don't think that we just imagine, you know, a separate program for the specific
we just
groups
them,
that we want to include.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that scores well for us.
No kidding. That's great. I had no idea.
Oh.
Hmm. Not that, you know, it's not really an arts council-y thing to do, though.
To rank. Yeah.
It's not like hockey teams.
Well, no, but I mean, imagine if...
There are no arts council hockey pool. You know what I mean?
It
doesn't feel very...
I know, but imagine if, say, our local hockey team was ranked number five in the province.
Yeah.
There'd be big news.
Big news!
Don't you think we should make this big news?
Maybe we should make it big
news. Maybe we should do a media release.
I think so.
Have a party.
Well, let's...
I'd need money for that, though.
It could be... Well, we don't want to upset BC Arts Council. It might be like an inside baseball kind of information.
Oh, maybe it is, because I didn't know any of this. Like, it's not like it's on their website or something.
I doubt it would be.
Maybe
right?
I shouldn't have
said because if you're
anything.
Not number...
Is this show live?
Yeah. Right. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Sorry. Rewind. Yeah. So, anyway, we got a tiny bit off track, but for a super good reason. Now, for designers, environmental art has some similarities. It's in place. But it's more about relating to the architecture. So you're designing a solution for a specific space, but it isn't necessarily in nature.
Right.
So environmental graphics could be how you treat the inside of your lobby or wayfinding or, you know, so it's more technical than that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like the back of the Salmar is environmental graphics.
Huh.
To me.
Yeah. because it's only, because it can only work right there.
Yeah, it's a solution to a problem.
Right.
Based on a location, like a physical location.
Right.
So I think of the mosaic as environmental arts.
Interesting.
Because it's a solution to a problem.
Right.
Based on a location.
Right.
Right.
Well, the mosaic is definitely a site-specific work.
Yes.
But in the art world, it wouldn't be considered site-specific environmental work,
mm-hmm.
just because it doesn't decay with the natural right. processes of time.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. Because, then we're talking about is a difference between materials,
mm-hmm.
right? Natural materials, man-made mm-hmm. materials.
And it can be inside, too.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Yeah. So, like wayfinding at a hospital, or that's all environmental. Graphics, like how am I solving a problem with design in this environment?
But you know that, I mean, sorry, I'm off track again.
Yeah.
Way problem solving is an interesting approach.
Yes.
From the graphic design.
Yeah, that's what
sort of field.
Well,
right?
That's whereas, what designers do.
Yeah,
they're problem solvers.
Right. Whereas from the art side,
yes.
it's a communication tool.
Yes.
Right? I have a message, so it's not. You know, I think we're coming at it from two different ways.
Yes.
It's kind of,
but
so
we
of
end up
we're gonna,
in similar
yeah.
spots.
Well, we're doing similar things because mm-hmm. we're still communicating a message, both of us. You're doing it in order to approach an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a thing that is causing a barrier for people or for a system to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're creating a solution.
Or to make it work better.
Yeah.
It could be working, but I'm always trying to make it more productive.
Right.
Which is different than spending more money here, right?
Yeah.
Because you can do little tiny tweaks that save tons of time and tons of money.
Yeah.
That's what designers are supposed to do.
That's right. That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Oh, yeah.
The really big dollars, ka-ching. More than a parking meter
ka-ching,
gets per hour.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. Yeah.
I think, do you guys make actually more money than artists? I know artists only make on average what a parking meter makes per hour.
Some days, yeah, some days I... costs me money, so
yeah, just to go to work.
Yes, yeah. But no, I mean, it depends. Anything, I mean, who are we comparing ourselves to? Do I make as much money as Douglas Copeland?
Yeah, no. But I just mean like designers are, you're kind of more business people, right?
Yeah,
like you're definitely part of the business sphere
mm-hmm.
where your services are required in order to solve problems. So it seems to me that as part of a business world, you would be highly valued and appreciated. But I'm kind of getting the feeling.
Sometimes
that
you're highly valued and appreciated.
Yeah.
And if you have clients who highly value and appreciate you, you're well paid. Other times, not so much.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's the education piece. Designers are really terrible at that, ironically. They can't solve that problem for some reason.
At educating their clients.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think that's challenging because everybody has a brain, right? And we have to somehow infiltrate mm-hmm. the brain.
So you basically have to learn by or show them the way. And in the context of Earth Day and how we
yeah.
need to stay connected to our environment.
Yeah. So
because
we'll
we are it.
We're it, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what a lot of environmental artists are trying to say
mm-hmm.
with their messages, that we can be here and affect change without actually destroying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important message.
Yes.
It seems fairly simple on the outside. Of course, it's challenging mm-hmm. because we are a resource extraction
and that's
kind
a lesson.
Of place.
Yes.
kind of culture.
And that's a lesson nature teaches us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Biomimicry. Nothing is wasted in the forest.
Yeah.
So tell us about this collective of artists who...
Well,
we get that.
Actually, so for, if it's okay,
yeah,
first of all, I'd
okay.
like to deal with a couple of other ones because
okay.
they might be better known.
Okay.
Probably everybody has heard of Edward Bertinsky by now, right?
Yes.
He's a very famous now Canadian photographer who does site-specific photography messaging about how we affect, how nature is affected by our manufacturing. In fact, basically all of his photographs are on the theme of nature transformed through industry.
Okay.
So if you've ever seen an exhibition of his, you'll see photographs of very large areas that have been affected by some form of industry. For instance, like the tar sands area, an open pit mine, buildings that used to contain uranium item production or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I saw his show in Vancouver when I was at Vancouver Art Gallery, and we missed his artist talk by a day.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was, okay, so here's me and my family and my kids. You know, we're looking at these photographs like, wow, you know,
They're stunning, aren't they?
Yeah.
You can see them online.
They're beautiful. Like, the beauty in them is really intense, and the quality of the photograph is unbelievably,
yes,
you know, detailed. So he's doing these super high quality things. But what was really exciting is being able to talk to the security guard who had attended the talk the day before.
Oh, okay. That's a good way to do
it. Yeah. She was able to tell us the story of some of the pieces, and that made it whole, like, just like, it was a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. I so encourage people to go to artist talks when you have the opportunity. So one of the ones that had the biggest impact on me after hearing the story is the one of the shrimp farm.
Okay.
So there's a photo of a shrimp farm, and I think it's Indonesia. And it's, if you can imagine, a series of little tiny houses and little tiny docks with little tiny squares of water in between the docks.
Yeah.
So in there, there's some kind of containment. Yeah, containment systems or something. And this network of little tiny docks is huge, and it goes on forever. And it goes way out into the ocean, and
it looks very tidy.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he actually was under threat from the government of that place. It must have been maybe in China. Anyway,
China.
He wasn't allowed to actually be above it in the helicopter. So it was very clandestine what he did.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And so even getting those photographs was a big accomplishment. But what was interesting is that the bottom of the ocean where those are is completely dead, a completely dead part of the ocean, absolutely intensely polluted. And that is because all of the fishermen and all of their families and all of the parts and pieces of the shrimp industry are the effluent of such just drops to the bottom of the ocean. So you can imagine, like, even just bathrooms and you know, the people's bathrooms are just going to the bottom of the ocean, and the chemicals and medicines and all that stuff used to keep these things alive all dropping to the bottom of the ocean. So there was a story associated with that that was far bigger than this interesting photograph of
geometric patterns.
Yeah. 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 And that's the kind of thing I think that environmental artists will try to message.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at this thing as a almost natural beauty. Look at these beautiful little houses out in the middle of the blue, blue ocean.
Oh yeah, it's the patterns.
But what is it? What is it? What's happening there? What's it doing to us? What's the long-term effect?
What's it doing to them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, don't eat shrimp rings.
No.
Those things are, like, that's exactly what's being produced.
Really?
On that gigantic shrimp farm there. Yeah.
It's good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's very well known internationally, and of course has a big, like, lots of photographs of compressed oil drums, oil filters, like I said, mines. He grew up in St. Catharines, Ontario, which is where my grandmother grew up. And so he was, from the time he was little, was exposed to General Motors plant sites and stuff. So he really got a sense right off, like, this whole consumption thing, not so good for us, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of his background. Anyway,
but there's a kind of a, I always find those industrial areas, there's sort of like a sad beauty about them. The order and all the lines are straight, and you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a highway, and then all the warehouses are lined up along the highway. Almost like when you fly into Toronto. You look at all the landscape, and it's so tidy and organized, and yet so artificial. It's just...
Yeah. There's some really beautiful time-lapse photography of city development that you can get. I can't remember what the site is, but probably if you Googled, like, time-lapse photography, climate change or something, there's some areas, like in California, that show how, like, the desert's been slowly being populated.
Yes.
And, and just... You know,
creeping
shorelines that are, you know, receding. Or, anyway, yeah, good stuff. And then the other very well-known environmental artist that lots of people in Salmonar might recognize is Andy Goldsworthy. And that's because a film about him, Rivers and Tides, was one of the films presented by the Film Society 5-10 years ago.
Yes.
It was a long time ago, but he does site-specific work. He's a British-born artist, lives in Scotland, and he does work with the natural environment. So he creates work with nature's materials using only his bare hands, his teeth, his saliva.
Really?
And yeah, and just natural materials he finds on site, like feathers, rocks, you know, like sticks. That's all that he'll use for tools.
Huh.
Yeah. So he creates works that will specifically go away, like right fairly quick. In fact, he'll spend hours and hours, like an entire, almost an entire day on a big sand sculpture, a big like Fibonacci spiral Ooh. Thing. Yeah, see, Fibonacci. I used that in a sentence. Good I was job. Pretty exciting. Jackie would be pleased that I could pronounce that properly. a giant, you know, spiral sculpture that will just, the tide will come in and take it away.
And that's it.
And that's it. It's
temporary.
Gone. Yep. And he's done all kinds of things like petal-wrapped boulders. Have you ever seen one of his petal-wrapped boulders?
No, I'm looking.
Beautiful, like super intense red boulder in the middle of a big pile of gray boulders. But it's all just petals from flowers, right?
No, yeah, there we go. There's one. Yeah. It's fantastic.
It is. It's so beautiful. So it's all stuff that just goes away. There is absolutely nothing. Like that's, I think, why he uses his saliva instead of glue or, you know, some other weird material.
Oh, sure, because it would introduce something.
Yeah.
Unnatural.
Yeah.
Into the, yeah.
And he's staying totally natural. He's a natural dude. So his work is really interesting to look at. He's made these beautiful sort of perfect circles out of just different colored leaves, like really tiny art. Tiny art that you'd come across in the environment and go, holy, who did that?
Wow. Yeah. Like the Inukshuks in a way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, then there's quite a few others I'd love to honor, but so I just want to make sure I don't take over.
No, that's fine. I don't know much about them, so.
Well, but also you're talking about the environmental art being a design yes. from the design world. Like architecture mm-hmm. is environmental
art. Well, of course it is. Mm-hmm. Well, good architecture is.
Yeah.
There's some bad architecture that is not conscious of the environment at all.
Yeah.
So there's bad environmental graphics that's or true. Art.
Well,
or architecture.
There's been bad environmental art in my field too. Mm-hmm. There's in fact people, artists who have done these enormous site-specific works to bring attention to something that ended up damaging the very thing that they were trying to bring attention to. Like I think there was one, I'm not sure the artist's name, the guy that does like the big fabric wrapping.
Yes, thing. Yes.
I can't remember what he wrapped in fabric, but it ended up causing damage because of course it obstructed the light for a certain kind of plant or something. And
oh no.
Yeah. So I mean, crazy.
Oh, I like his work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not everything can be consequence free.
Or like Mount Rushmore. Is that environmental art or environmental damage?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ooh, that's pretty intense.
Every time I see it freaks me out. Like, what's that doing there? But
We are kind of funny in the sense of we want to overcome nature to sort of make the nature bow to us in a mm-hmm. way, right? Like make the nature honor us. Mm-hmm. And that is a perfect example of that.
And the other thing I sort of struggle with is everything is from nature, even all that bad stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just the way we alter it.
Yeah. Or either manipulation.
Chemically or, mm-hmm. right? But there is no, everything is from nature.
But once you've,
How you alter it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you alter it in those ways, it can't go back. That's the problem, right?
If you can't unalter it. So that's the real, to me, you know.
Well, that's the damage.
Yeah. Is if you can alter it and it can be restored to the state that it was, is different than if you can no longer.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like they figure by a certain time, I can't remember, like 2050, like 8% of the topsoil will have will be made up of plastic.
Yeah, we need topsoil. I mean,
we kind of need it. Mm-hmm. And if we've got a portion of it that's made up entirely of plastic, there's no nutrients in plastic. Plastic doesn't actually break down past that point of, you know, like the microbeads, right? That's as little as it gets.
Yeah.
So there is no going back.
No, we can't alter it.
And
yet we need plastic.
Do we need plastic?
We do.
I don't know if we need plastic.
Well, try and have a surgery or get a stint if you've had a heart attack or.
Okay, right? But we invented plastic.
I think we need
what if we
some
invented
plastic.
Something that wasn't plastic, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying.
So, I mean, that's, I sort of think, well, if we're capable of inventing plastic, we're capable of inventing.
Yeah.
Unplastic.
Exactly. So speaking of plastic.
Yes.
There's an environmental artist who's a photographer, Chris Jordan.
Yes.
Have you heard of this guy?
No.
I think I heard of him before. And then when I was kind of looking up some artists, I saw his thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen this stuff. So he does like photographs of our overconsumption.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making a statement about how fast we are consuming. And one of his pieces is called Plastic Bottles. Mm-hmm. And it is a photograph of 2 million plastic bottles, which is the amount of plastic bottles that is used every 5 minutes in the United States.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's his statement, right? Is this is how fast we are using up the planet.
Yeah, because there's consumption and then there's overconsumption.
Yes.
It's two different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's his kind of thing. So he calls it, are you ready for this? I like
yes.
He documents the slow motion apocalypse.
Oh. Wow.
I know.
Ooh, it must be tough being him getting up every day. I mean, you can't let this...
Yeah.
Yes, it's a reality, but there's also things you can do. And if we got it here, we can get us out. I believe that.
Well, yeah, it's just like the voting thing, right? Like we get so mad at people not voting because they say, I'm only one vote.
Yeah.
But did you see that little graphic? Somebody did a little cartoon that had like 60% of the people, right? So like, I don't know, a whole bunch of little tiny heads and bodies and then a line and then 40% of the people, a whole bunch of little tiny heads and lines. And the 60% people were collectively saying, I don't vote because my vote doesn't make
matter.
A difference.
Exactly. But it, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the earth thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've heard people say, well, me recycling, that isn't going to make any difference. The recyclers here just chuck it in the garbage anyway. Well, excuse me, you can't make a decision based on, well, it's only going to be this.
But you can't buy things either based on what you're going to do with it after you're done with it. I think you have to think about what you're buying in the first place.
That's true. But you can also make it, you can make decisions about what's going to happen to it. I mean, that's a corporate responsibility.
I know that, but we're so, you know, we only think about it at the end of the production line.
Yeah.
So if you don't buy it in the first place.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah. Because there is no away.
There's no away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes somewhere.
It's a pretty deep topic.
It is.
Okay. Do you remember the 80s?
Yes.
Okay. So in the early 80s, the green movement was starting.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Hey, I remember doing a whole project on with David Suzuki handouts when I was in, like, this was 1979. I was in grade, like, whatever, six. And that was like, okay, this is the environmental movement.
Yes.
We're going to go green. We're going to...
Yes.
1979.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway.
I had a shirt. I remember I had a shirt from Loblaws about going green.
Wow.
And all the rage was to buy your own plastic little grocery cart to bring with you.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And plastic bags and you know, fabric bags. But those fabric bags are made of...
Plastic.
How many plastic bags do you think it would take to make one of those?
Oh, I don't know.
Fabric bags. It's hundreds.
Yeah.
So I always feel like it's hypocritical.
But it's supposed to be post-consumer material, though, right? That's the concept that we're using it. At least we're using it twice rather than just once, right?
Well, it would be like using 100 bags.
Yeah. Do you like one of those weird nylon things, right?
Yeah.
Well, nylon is a scourge on the planet too. Yeah. So don't get us started.
No, but I'm just saying I guess we sort of get lulled into this. Oh, I'm doing my thing. I brought my recycling. I did, you know, I brought my grocery bags.
Yeah.
But it's so shallow. I mean, it has to go way back to A, do you need it?
Yeah.
Right? Is it a need or a want?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever happened to reduce and reuse?
I know.
All we ever talk about is recycle.
Yeah. Because recycling's easy for society, right? It's like, oh, that's fine. It goes into recycling.
As long as
so
I have
no
a bin
guilt.
To put it in, yeah. I feel good.
That's
not good enough.
No, it isn't good enough.
No, and it helps us justify, well, you know what? I will buy that big plastic tub of laundry soap.
Yeah.
A box would...
Oh, look, it's got the recycle triangle on it. It's fine. I know.
And whereas if you bought a box of laundry soap...
Yeah.
It's a box.
Yeah.
Cardboard's going to, you know.
Yeah.
And then also the other thing that irritates me is the lifespan of the thing, right? So styrofoam trays for meat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they have maybe a lifespan of 10 days maximum.
Yeah.
Right? From the time they're used to the time they're disposed of. Styrofoam plates in at the mall, at the fast food outlets... have about a 30-second lifespan from the time that you're served till the time that you're done eating.
Yeah.
So, and to eat something on a substrate, you know, it's the designer talk here, that literally serves a purpose for 30 seconds and can never be destroyed is so selfish.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stuff I won't do. If there's styrofoam, I'm like, nope, I don't want it.
Yeah. I know, and it's about voting with your dollar. You can just decide.
But people, again, we, you know, last time, a couple weeks ago, convenience is your frenemy. Mm-hmm. I know styrofoam is convenient. I know that it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. You know what? But you taught me this. You pay now or you pay later.
Yeah, pick one.
And so on a day like today, I just feel better ranting about this. Who would eat a piece of pizza on a styrofoam plate? Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Because you save $2 at the grocery store because styrofoam's cheaper than... Just eat it on your hand.
Yeah, you get a napkin. Yeah. A paper napkin. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And actually, you know what? That message needs to go out on a mass scale mm-hmm. because it's the education system. I know for a fact that when you are helping serve pizza at the schools for a certain kind of pizza day,
yes.
there's a stack of styrofoam plates by which you put a piece of pizza on for every kid that comes mm-hmm. through there. So that's what, like 300 plates going out in yes. a day in little old yes. school, in one school, in one little town, in one country.
Yes.
This is, yeah. And this is overconsumption. This is exactly what we're talking about.
Totally overconsumption, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't want to, it is rainy day, so I'm raining on this parade. It's not good enough to put
a
bin
it's
and okay. say, oh, we got a bin, we're good. No.
No.
It's not good enough.
No, it isn't. And you're right about the reduce and reuse. Like, we've got to stop throwing things out because we've got a tear in it or, you know, because it needs some mending. We just mm-hmm. have to learn how to mend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't people know how to thread a needle anymore?
I don't know.
Sew up that hole.
I know. It's that sense of entitlement and, you know.
Yeah. And what about patches, right? Like, there used to be patches for jeans.
Cool. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know about you, but I had like 4 or 5 patches on my jeans by yes. the time they got thrown out.
Yep.
So, come on. Like, it's not that hard. It's almost as convenient as throwing it out and going and buying a pair of new jeans.
Exactly. And then you taught me this too. First world problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know. But you know, oh gosh, we could go on and on. Okay.
Yeah. I just think we need to be a bit more humble and a bit more introspective about it.
Yeah.
So there are things you can do and they can be little things.
And we are very powerful as individuals.
Yes.
That is an important thing to remember. Just because your neighbor throws out a bunch of stuff that, you know, should be recycled and he shouldn't be consuming like that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you should go ahead and feel like, okay, look, that guy's using up 10 bags of garbage, then surely my 2 bags isn't mm-hmm. bad. No, you can still mm-hmm. do half a bag of garbage every 2 weeks
yeah.
and you would be
and, you know, composting.
Contributing.
And, I mean, there really is no reason for garbage. If you recycle, reduce, reuse, recycle. Mm-hmm.
And compost.
What is there to throw away?
I know. And that's about making wise choices, though, when you buy.
Yeah.
Because if you're buying stuff that can't be dealt with, then like in materials, in packaging that can't be dealt with,
yeah.
then you're going to have garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're careful about where you spend your money, you can be a zero waste household.
Yes, you can be zero waste. I mean, not if you have little babies, maybe, but...
Even with little babies.
Yeah.
We did pretty good when our
did
kids were babies.
Did pretty good?
Oh, we did very well.
Still think about that my kids' diapers will survive my kids. It's kind of a gross thought.
Yeah. Well, even us cloth diaper people used them once in a while because we had to mm-hmm. have them on the go or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there were other options too. Other disposables that are, you know,
not quite
biodegradable
yes.
than the average cheaper pair. Anyway.
Whoa, we totally got
onto
off there.
Diapers? Maybe there's artwork about diapers.
Okay, so we did want to talk a little bit about...
About the collectives.
And yes.
Yeah, like the Red Earth Collective. And not that I want to go on and on about all the different kinds of artwork that's been created, because I think a person can just Google this and have a great time looking at all the amazing environmental art that's been created over the last 30, 40, 50 years. Because, of course, it has been 50 years that we've been looking at the environment as an issue we need to deal with.
Yeah.
So, but the Red Earth Collective is a multinational collective of artists and have been doing wonderful things. And they're not doing high impact things. They're ensuring that they're marking, you know, sort of the record of time, where we are right now. Like the one that they did, it was called Trace, was marking an erosion line along a shore.
Yes.
Stuff like that. But what I kind of wanted to say about this is that we're in Salmon Arm looking at a project very similar to this. in that we're doing a Trail Alliance partnership.
Yes.
Next year, where we are identifying 10 trails and partnering guides, artists, and photographers to go out and experience the trails and make art on the trails. Some of that work will come back into the gallery and be on exhibition in July, August 2016. And so we've selected all the artists who will be doing the guide experience. That work will be in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also been in discussion with some artists about doing site-specific work. So this kind of thing, environmental art, is going to be part of the Trail Alliance exhibition.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it solves a problem and tells a story.
Well, it's all about the story, right? And that's kind of, I think that's what a lot of site-specific environmental artists do, is especially when they do something that's not, you know, like it's not a visual, you know, like when Andy Goldsworthy does his big spherical petal, you know, monuments. You know, it's kind of identifying color and shape in a landscape.
Okay.
Right? Whereas some environmental artists are telling the story of humanity by their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil McIntyre-Paul actually was telling me about an artist who just went along a trail and just set the rocks that he found along the trail in a certain way so that it actually made a line as he went along. So even just that little act creates a story, because it's like, the story that I've been here.
Yes.
And trails are stories. Trails wouldn't exist. I mean, human trails anyways, game trails and stuff, but human trails wouldn't exist unless we had a story to tell.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Or a place to go.
Yeah. Or a thing to experience.
Yes.
A purpose, a journey.
Yes, true. Phil often talks about how the storytelling, that a trail is a story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we're exploring.
Yeah. Right? Outdoor storytelling.
Yeah.
Sort of like the indoor storytelling we did last.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. That'd so it's that's quite 2016. So next year, next summer. And we have to allow a whole year for this to happen, because some artists want to experience the trails that they've been given in all the seasons.
The different seasons, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And I think it'll be really interesting. We're going to have a publication at the end of it too. And so the publication will serve as a trail guide as well as a documentation of this amazing experience.
I'm so excited.
I know. It'll be so wonderful. It'll be a real legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the process of collaborating with Phil has been so interesting, because I said, well, we have to limit it, right, to the numbers of artists and the numbers of trails that we can highlight, because we only have a gallery of such a size.
So how many will there be?
Well, there'll be 10 artists who will be in the gallery.
Yes.
And then there's an additional 3 artists that are doing site-specific work. And then we've got 3 other artists who were just really fantastic, and we just couldn't include them in the first 10, and we're trying to figure out some other off-site work that maybe we can do.
Oh, wonderful.
Including
that's
them.
Very inclusive.
I know, it's really, well, it was so difficult to select the artists, because, you know, we had 19 applications for 10 spots, and there was really only 2 that really didn't work for the purpose. So the other 17 were amazing. And so how do you pick 10 out of that?
Like, I don't know.
So
that's why you get paid the big bucks.
That's right, the very big bucks. So what we did was we just tried to make sure there was a balance of media, and you know, so, you know, for instance, like Cindy Whitehead, I'm sure she doesn't mind me telling that she's one of the 10. As a pastel artist who has experience on the trails, it really was like a very unique.
A perfect fit.
Yes, yes. It was a perfect fit. So people like her and Lisa Figuero was selected. She has a lot of experience in the Alpine Meadows.
Yes.
And has hiked very high mountain trails.
Right, because we always talk about this. Artists are more than artists. They're hikers, they're dancers, they're foodies,
and her with her water media. I mean, it just kind of, it became a thing about looking at the combination of their experience, their art, like artistic and exhibition experience, plus their trail experience, plus the kind of media they're managing, and whether or not they'd be able to do some of it on the trail and some of it in their studio. So, so it was very inclusive and thorough.
Yes. So, and I love that the guide will have maps and maybe wildlife, flora, fauna kind of thing.
Because the photographer will accompany them.
Yes.
So it'll be a little team of 3 on all these trails.
So it's a field guide.
It will be.
Yes. I love solutions that do that, that solve problems and create art. Just like the bike racks to me.
Yes.
They solve a problem, but they also create an experience. And this has all the markings
of
that.
The whole package.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was, I was amazed that they could come up with 10 trails that they wanted to highlight because they had over 300 trails that they thought would really, this one would be great. And this guide would be awesome. And this, you know, like I can
understand the challenge. Well, it's that there's so much depth of commitment and diversity in that community, isn't there?
Yeah. And so we end up having
so many kilometers of trails.
Oh, exactly.
Like,
and then all the different kinds of ecosystems that are represented on those trails, right?
So we ended up, and biodiverse zones and
I know, like BDGs. There's little interior rainforests. Yeah. And so what we ended up doing is looked at a map, a giant map of the Shuswap and beyond, and we started to mark in the trails that had already been identified so that we could get a good selection and spread it out a bit. And, you know, then we'd recognize, oh, you know, what would be really nice is to, have somebody that does the Nisqually Meadows and then, somebody should be up at Hunnequah Lake doing the interior rainforest. And, right, like it just started to be like, oh, no.
Yeah, because like, we have so many different, right? So many different, yeah.
So it's exciting, but it was challenging to narrow it down to a small group. But maybe this can be something we do every 3 or 4 years or something, because there was a lot of interest and there's a lot of people with a lot of knowledge that we want to grab onto.
2020 edition.
Yeah. And then the site-specific work will be created. There's 3 artists been selected for that, and they'll be on different trails again. So people will actually have to go out to the trail to see the site-specific work.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And now, as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, now we're having a conversation about what can be our dramatic moment.
Well, I have always said that at no time did we say that a dramatic moment was necessarily current.
Yes.
Yes.
So
hit it.
Well, maybe we can have two because yours was awesome too. Okay. So, okay.
Well,
so,
I don't think mine was as awesome as yours.
Just picture this.
Okay.
It's 1982.
Okay.
An artist, Agnes Denne, has planted a field of wheat in a 2-acre vacant lot in downtown Manhattan.
Wow.
Yeah. That field of wheat grows and she harvests 1,000 pounds of wheat.
Wow.
Yeah. So right in the middle of Manhattan.
Oh, you think about the logistics of that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's no longer 2 acres of free land in Manhattan.
Probably not now, but in 1982, it was a really big deal to kind of show agriculture. Yeah. It was a statement about agriculture and urban landscape.
Well,
right?
Yeah, you can take the city. So what's that farm? You can have a city. You can't have a city without a farm.
Right.
It was much more cleverly put than that. Anyway. And so, in the 80s in New York, in the early 80s in New York City was pretty dire times. The state went bankrupt, or the city went, either the state or the city went bankrupt.
Wow.
And, you know, crime was, it was just like New York's had an incredible transformation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So, okay. So,
maybe that was part of it.
Maybe. So after the wheat was harvested, the wheat itself went on tour to 28 cities around the world.
That's great.
I know. And it was basically, the message was, it was in conjunction with the International Art Show for the End of World Hunger.
Okay.
So imagine in 1982, they were saying, okay, it's time to end world hunger. What year is it now?
It's still time to end world hunger.
Yeah, it still is time. Mm-hmm. And so those seeds eventually were symbolically planted all over the world.
Wow.
All in aid of ending world hunger.
That's fantastic.
But it didn't take,
that was Ethiopia too, remember?
Remember that.
All those rock star singers, you know, I remember.
Band-Aid. Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, Band-Aid? And the famine and,
That didn't really fix it. But you know what? You never know what it would have been like without that kind of
impact, we don't know,
right?
Do we? Yeah.
Yeah. So you never know what those things are. But it's interesting, like, you know, big efforts to end child poverty, you know, by the year 2000. Come on. Yeah,
that was Ed Broadbent's last speech in the House.
Yeah. So we have intentions, but of course our future self is thought about in a different part of our brain than our present self.
Well, that would explain a few things.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's all about procrastination, yeah. Right? Like your future self is thought about in a part of your brain that also thinks about strangers. So, I mean, things that affect your future self have the equivalent to things that affect strangers. You're like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. That guy can deal with that later, right?
Huh.
Yeah. And so we don't think about it in the urgent.
Yeah.
Because it's not right now. It's not our current self. That's a different part of our brain that thinks about our current self and has protective, you know, sort of self-preservation ideas. Future self is the same as a stranger.
The future self is the same as a stranger.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It is a bit yikes.
So maybe there can be environmental art projects that helps one get in touch with one's future self.
Maybe.
So one can have that very critical conversation. Wow.
We need to separate our future self out of us and have it look back at us and say, okay, look, buddy.
Listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how to do that. I wish I did. I'm sure psychiatrists have been struggling with that for eons.
Yes.
Anyway, your dramatic moment.
Oh, well, it's not nearly as exciting, but it doesn't involve growing wheat in Manhattan. We just returned from the ArtsBC conference in Penticton. It was lovely. They were lovely hosts. And I think it's pretty dramatic that the province of BC does not have a cultural policy.
Mm-hmm.
Most provinces do. New Brunswick is like 30 pages.
Yeah.
I'm sure Alberta is hundreds and hundreds of pages. So part of the mandate of this group is to work with all the arts councils and create what's called a cultural policy framework to assist the province in
right.
developing a cultural policy. So
right.
because it does sound like a lot of blah, blah, blah.
It does. And to be honest, we've been involved with this for 2 years because mm-hmm. it was the very first arts summit that we went to that Arts Alliance
yes,
did.
Yes, in 2013.
Yeah. And it's been the purpose all along to create this framework, to not write policy, but to create a framework for policy that's unique to BC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because government writes policy.
Yes.
We don't write policy.
No, and policy is an instrument of government, but it also is an indicator of level of importance, you know?
Yes. So here we are, BC, what is considered in Canada, and a lot of people perceive BC like this, as the most art-intensive province in the country.
Most artistic. Or more people earn their money through the arts.
Yes. And that's the truth, actually.
Percentage-wise yeah. than in other provinces.
Yeah. And we don't have a cultural policy.
No. So. And I just think it's not dramatic.
It
but
is
it's
dramatic.
It's interesting.
But what else is dramatic?
Yes.
Is that here we are 2 years into this process, and there was a presenter explaining to us what we are expected
Still
to do.
Still asking the same questions.
Yeah. What makes BC unique?
I know.
And I think that they've been all over the place. They brought people together down to Vancouver 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They've had multiple consultation meetings since. They've been out in the province
traveling
around.
They've been to the north. They've been to the island.
Yep. Yeah. And they've been to the meeting Coonies. With arts councils and conferences like this where there's gathering of arts communities. And basically making them do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. did I say that out loud?
You did. That's all right.
Well, and you had a really good point when we were there. You just it's a good thing we walked out at the break there because you were about to say some very strong words.
I was just thinking about our arts council's been around for 44
years.
44 years. I'm sure they go to one meeting year where someone says, okay, what are the arts? Why are the arts important? What's this really about? And I just think we keep having the same conversation over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so, but the province has created Creative BC, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the recording industry, the publishing industry, the movie industry, and there's another one, digital arts industry.
Okay.
Right? So what's happened is they've recognized the economic impact of the industries. And so that's one thing all on its own. And then there's the Cultural or Arts Alliance, mm-hmm. which is everybody else. But I think all they've done is stratified it again.
Yeah.
So that the industries, you know, movie, yep. music, publishing, and digital arts. I mean, these guys have the power. They have the money. They're getting the support. Because they have that power and they have that money, mm-hmm. yet there's the Arts Alliance is everybody else who's feeding up the chain.
Yeah.
You know, is still saying, but we're important too, and here's why. And yeah. I just feel like, I'm so tired of having this conversation over and over again. It's a bit like minor hockey in the NHL.
Yeah.
So the NHL is being supported because they're awesome and they make a lot of money and they're champions and blah, blah, blah. But minor hockey, the government's saying, yeah, you guys, we're not sure what your story is. You go figure it out and you let us know. Yeah. And then we'll see if we can come up with some kind of framework. Well, excuse me, but there would be no NHL players without, right?
Yeah.
Minor hockey.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same thing. And we always stratify that one level.
Yeah.
And that's where all the cream, I feel like they're skimming off the top.
Yeah. Well, it's because you hit the nail on the head. You said they have the power, mm-hmm. right? And so with money and success come power, they have the power of the media. So they have the power to send messages, which scares the government.
Yeah,
so,
and they do have economic impact. Mm-hmm. Like, it's big business. Yeah, well, maybe not. Right. Publishing's not big
business. But having to continually prove that it's important to have community arts, arts education, all that stuff is tiresome for sure. Because you're right, there is no recognition that those big industries are being fed.
Well, it's just a distraction ploy. Yeah. They're just distracting us. I was there in 2013. I told you then. I don't like repeating myself.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like the arts education, the fact that arts and music keeps getting torn out of the school system. How do we expect BC to have a music industry if we keep removing?
How do you expect to create? So, okay. Oh, I feel like I'm really cranky. I don't mean to be cranky. But we have to raise learners, right?
Yeah.
And they have to be able to go out and solve problems and send messages. But if we just sit them down and tell them everything, we're not teaching them how to solve problems. We're not teaching them how to send messages, mm-hmm. right? And those are two, that's the solution to almost every, how do you solve the problem? How do you send the message that you solve the problem?
Yeah.
That's what it is to be human, right? That's what the earth does.
Well, we're not teaching our kids how to be human.
No, I don't know. And that's what nature does. It solves problems and it sends messages. Oh, look, it's spring. I have little buds on my leaves, on my tree, right? Look, it's fall. My leaves are falling.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. I'm out of chlorophyll. Therefore, I'm going to drop all my leaves.
Yeah.
Right? So they're solving problems, sending messages. And nature's really good at that. Mm-hmm. So
we need to learn.
We need to learn.
And we need to be aware of it, mm-hmm. right? It's to the awareness. And I think that's where the disconnect is with the levels of government, education, all that stuff. There's no awareness.
Too many levels.
There's too many words on their learning outcomes page that they have to fulfill. And there's too much time spent wordsmithing and not enough time spent in ideas and creativity.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if we have time for this because I really would love to just talk a little bit about upcoming events. But at this conference, mm-hmm. Nico from Theo's Restaurant, if you've ever been to Pentecost and eaten at Theo's Restaurant, you'll know exactly who Nico is. An amazing guy. He shows up at this youth engagement conference or panel, like as a panelist. I'm like, what? There's like young people there. There's Nico. He's, like a middle sort of aged mm-hmm. fellow. Like, what's he doing here? Turns out he is an amazing facilitator of youth programming in Penticton and has done everything from, he's written a book called The Director in the Classroom and all about filmmaking.
Wow.
He's got a program that's called All of Us, like mm-hmm. All of OLIVE.
Oh, okay.
Where he has kids, he goes into the classroom, teaches kids how to cook. They take pictures of the food. They paint the food. They make greeting cards out of the paintings. They sell the greeting cards. They use the money to microfinance farmers and small business people overseas.
Wow.
I know, right? It's all about being creative with the money that you have.
Yes.
And it was so inspiring, so amazing. So, I mean, there's just the awareness level can be kicked up a notch is what I'm saying.
Yes.
So that you've got not just awareness, not just action, but impact.
Yes. Impact. Well, speaking of impact.
Yes.
We have a couple minutes to talk about events.
Upcoming events, of course. We've got the youth exhibition coming up in May. Mm-hmm. Opening night is May 1st. I'm starting to tweet on Because Art. So hashtag Because Art. Photos of some of the work in progress. I visited some of the classrooms and the artwork being created is amazing because our young people have totally different brains than we do, mm-hmm. and they think about things differently. So it's fantastic to watch. So I'm tweeting on that on SAG Curator, if you're on Twitter. Other upcoming events, of course, the same night as the opening night is the Night of Stars.
Yes.
Music Festival. So there's that, $10 a night or $10 a person. Caravan Spring Show is coming up May 7th to 10th.
First ever spring show.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
So events can be found on our participate page on www.salmonarmartcenter.ca. And you can find us on Facebook at Salmon Arm Arts Center. And we get, we put all kinds of things that are upcoming on that.
And you can just come in.
Yeah.
Too. And say
hello. You could just come into the gallery. We've got just a couple of days left.
Say hello to Diana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jeff Wilson's show is on until April 25th?
I guess.
What? This Saturday.
I don't know.
And that's a boy show. If you're a boy, you'll be interested in this show. That's should have seen the boys that came in the last class that I had the school tour. The boys were like, wow, that's awesome. That's a grammar. Awesome. That's a train. That's yeah. See you next time on Artscape.
Here on Artscape.